Thank you for listening to this podcast from TRE, Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain and around the world. For more information, please visit tre.radio.
Live on Era, presented by Ger Sweeney in association with emeraldconnection.net.
Good evening and welcome. It's nice to have your company again on this Monday evening for Live on Era, the Irish programme. And coming up in the next hour, I think I have put together a jolly nice programme for you. George Lee will be talking to us about some of the stories that had people talking back in Ireland and indeed maybe here in Spain as well. Peter O'Dwyer will be talking to us about the up-to-date situation in relation to Brexit and Ireland. And there was quite a bit happened last week, so we'll catch up on that very shortly. I was in Malaga during the week with Padre Adrián from San Patricio's Church, St. Patrick's Church, and I'll be talking to Father Adrián or Padre Adrián about the parish of St. Patrick, and it's not our St. Patrick. No, it's a different one, but we'll find out more about that later. And I will be talking to Aida Blanes Arias, who is the Foreign Residence Councillor in Torremolinos, talking to her about a very important day, the 28th of February, and events happening around Día de Andalucía. And they don't just happen on the 28th. There's a weekend of celebration planned, so we'll find out more about that. Now, can I tell you, next week on the programme, I am going to be bringing back a lady. In fact, you'll hear her voice today on the programme as well, but only just very briefly. I spoke to Patricia Trainer, who was originally from Belfast, and she has spent many years, over 30 years in Spain, teaching in the University of Malaga. She was teaching Irish studies. Well, Patricia has a wealth of information, a wealth of stories and anecdotes, and she's going to share one with us most weeks on the programme, and we'll be starting that next week, so I am certainly looking forward to that. I'll be looking ahead this week on the programme as well to some famous Irish birthdays happening this coming week. We'll have some music based around that, because there are a few musical birthdays in there. There may be a history lesson, but I don't know. Fingers crossed, we'll hope for the best we can get that in. So let's start with the birthdays, shall we? The 25th of February, today, it's Monday, and we have two birthdays that you might be interested in. Neil Jordan, writer and film director, was born 68 years ago today, back in 1951. And Joey Dunlop, who unfortunately is no longer with us, motorcycling race ace, I suppose you could call him, born in County Antrim in 1952. On Wednesday, it's the 27th of February, Jason Byrne, the comedian, was born in Dublin in 1972, so happy 47th birthday to him in advance. Richie Ryan, do you remember the former Minister for Finance and various other things? Many years ago, politician, born in Dublin on the 27th of February, back in 1929. Thursday is the 28th of February, Barry McGuigan, the boxer, was born in Clonus in 1961, happy 58th birthday to him. Sean McDiarmada, leader of the 1916 Rising, was born in Kittyclocher in Leitrim in 1883. And Alice Taylor, the writer, was born in Newmarket in County Cork on the 28th of February in 1938. Friday is the 1st of March, and Nuala O'Fuilleann, the writer, was born in Dublin in 1940. Rory Gallagher, musician, was born in Donegal in 1949. Martin O'Neill, the soccer manager, was born in 1953. So happy 66th birthday to him on Friday. On Sunday then, the 3rd of March, hard to believe we're in March already, Brian Kerr, the other soccer manager and elite player as well, was born in Dublin in 1953. Happy 66th birthday to him. Ollie Campbell, rugby player, was born in Dublin in 1954. Happy 65th birthday to Ollie Campbell. And Boyzone's Ronan Keating was born in Dublin in 1977. And that is where we get our very first musical interlude. Here he is, the man himself, Ronan Keating, 42 years old, next Sunday, and here he is with Life is a Roller Coaster.
Yeah.
42 years old next Sunday. That is the voice of Ronan Keating. Life is a roller coaster, and at 42, he has just about figured that out. Let's do a very quick break. Come back to me just after that. I'll be talking to George Lee.
Live on Era, presented by Ger Sweeney in association with EmeraldConnection.net. Live on Era, presented by Ger Sweeney in association with EmeraldConnection.net.
Well, there's another week done and dusted on the Emerald Isle, and it's time for... Now, you see, years ago, people, they still do call the horses the GGs. I think we could call this the GGs as well, because George Lee joins Ger Sweeney to have a chat about what was happening over the past week. George Lee, you're welcome along again. Good to talk to you.
And you too, George, just as long as I'm the first G.
I was just going to say to you, actually, you see, this is where we have a problem. I think we're too alike. We think too alike. I was going to say, well, can I be the first G? But anyway, we just put that to one side. We'll let our people discuss that and figure it out, shall we?
Absolutely.
All right, we're going to start on a good note. There are a few new multimillionaires in Ireland.
Yeah, a lovely story, Ger, during the week. The Euro Millions, which apparently Ireland is one of the luckiest countries in all of the countries in which the Euro Millions is played for, was won in Ireland the other night. 175.4 million euros.
That's a lot of millions.
It's a lot of millions. But the nice part about it is that it was won between a family group. I believe there's about eight in the group.
Fabulous.
So, you know, it really is. And they vary from a retired couple to a younger couple and their family in between. So, look, good luck to them. I hate them.
With a passion. No. I sincerely hope that every single cent brings them happiness and joy and love and warmth. I do.
Absolutely, Geraint. I mean, look, it is a lovely, lovely story. But people need to put it in perspective. It's 140 million to one chance in winning that amount of money in the Euro Millions. So that just puts it into perspective.
But
how lucky they really
are. If you remember years ago in the UK, the catchphrase was, it could be you. It has to be somebody. Like, when if you play the lotto, it has to be somebody. And there's no reason in the world why it can't be you.
Well, I change that around because it'll never be me because I don't do the Euro Millions. So you have to buy a ticket, I suppose, to win it.
But good luck to them. Now, on to serious business. According to a recent poll, it appears that a majority of Irish people would like to see a united Ireland in their lifetime. Discuss.
Yes, and I think maybe the critical part of this is that the poll was for the Careburn Live on RTE1. It revealed that 63% of people would like to see United Ireland before they die. Just 18% of people said they would not like to see Irish unity happen, while 19% said they didn't know at all. Kind of perplexes me a little bit why somebody would respond to a poll and say they don't know. But there's been increasing speculation, of course, that the United Kingdom's departure from the European Union on the 29th of March could lead to the unification of the Republic of Northern Ireland. Most people that responded to the poll didn't think that Brexit would cause United Ireland, but I suppose it's the law of unintended circumstances, really. And I suppose the reality here, Ger, is that both sides have become an awful lot closer. Good Friday Agreement, you know, the tourism and business and all of that. Mm. And I think no matter what happens after that Brexit, and there we go again, we mentioned the word that we try to avoid every week, I do think that it's not going to roll back the closer ties that have emerged over the last 20 or 25 years between the North and the Republic.
You'd hope so. But go back to the point that you made, or the question that you asked, that you didn't know how people would reply, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
It's very simple. Your heart and your head would tell you two different things. If you look at the people in the North looking at the people in the Republic, they've got a better health system, they've got a better road network, they've got better cash flowing into the area. And if you look at the people in the South looking to the North, they're thinking, well, we can't get it right down here. So if we have to extend the coffers up there, how bad are things going to be all round?
Well, I suppose there is all of that, Ger, and I suppose there is also the thing that, you know, that many of the people in Northern Ireland know more than many of the people in the South. I mean, the poll that I would really like to see done is how many people in Southern Ireland have ever crossed the border, you know, that aren't from the surrounding counties.
Yeah.
Because thankfully I've been there and I've been all over it. I think an awful lot of people don't understand how some of Northern Ireland, to be perfectly honest, people from the south. And I would imagine that a lot of the, particularly the loyalist communities in Northern Ireland, would never have experienced Down South. So that's outside of the sort of work that, you know, organisations like Cooperation Ireland and other groups do, which is fantastic. So many people in Ireland have been to America and they've never been to Northern Ireland. It's kind of remarkable, really.
Listen, George, there's parts of Ireland where people have been to America and Australia, but I've never been to Croke Park. So, now, a little bit more serious, because the introduction of legal abortion in Ireland since January has resulted in a number of protests that have taken on various forms over the last couple of weeks and months, and much media discussion in the past week about that.
Yes, and I suppose, you know, whatever side of the argument that you find yourselves on, it was voted into our constitution last year in a democratic way. That has to be acted on from a legislative point of view. And I've listened to a lot of the debate around this in the last week or so. You know, what signifies a silent protest outside a clinic that would be providing the services? But I suppose the part of this that upsets me most is that anybody could take the law into their own hands. But Gardaí are investigating criminal damage to a medical centre in County Longford after the centre was spray painted with anti-abortion graffiti overnight during the week. And there's reports of a US-based anti-abortion group training Irish people how to target women.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's all very emotive stuff. And this is at a very difficult time in people's lives. Anybody that finds themselves in a situation where they require to even think about a service like that is going through a very difficult time.
Mm.
But I suppose the government's way of looking at this is that they aim to have draft exclusion zone legislation prepared by the summer. The zones will prevent women from being subjected to unwanted communications and visual displays when accessing abortion services. And this legislation, which is proposed, will also prohibit the photography of anybody in a safe zone accessing the services. Now, Ger, I suppose you have to take this out of the context of a big, big country like America or any of the European countries. Ireland is a very, very small country. The 6 degrees of separation that people talk about across the world are probably down to 2 in Ireland. And with the sort of social media and the sort of internet access and everything else that goes on now, people's privacy is paramount.
It is, of course, particularly in a difficult time.
Yes, and in difficult times. So I think that just needs to be appreciated. So,
Google Maps. They've uncovered, or it has uncovered, previously unknown archaeological monuments across the country. And these are not the only ones revealed in recent times by our good pals at Google. Tell us about that.
This is very interesting. I love stories like this because the Google Maps images were taken during last summer's drought. And what it did was that it showed up a significant number of monuments and archaeological sites. Now, I know from being involved, I suppose, in various building projects over the years in Ireland myself, that you can't dig a hole in Ireland finding an archaeological site.
Yes, true, but, yeah.
But I suppose this just because they were able to view it from on high, that they were able to unfurl some of the majority of these sites are in Meath, Kildare and Dublin, and others were found in Wicklow, Laois, Carlow and Kilkenny. So all along the eastern seaboard. And a gallery of the images, if people are interested in this, and I know certainly people are, and I had a look at this myself, is available to view on www.mythicalireland, that's mythicalireland.com. Separately then, Ger, gorse fire in County Wicklow during last summer as well revealed an old era sign. These are very interesting signs because, and I would have been close to one that was found and redone a number of years ago.
Where was that, George?
At Loophead. A number of years ago, right at Loophead Lighthouse. Such signs were made up of stones and were carved into the ground in coastal areas. All the headlands around Ireland had these carved into them in order to warn Allied and German airmen that they were flying over a neutral country.
Fabulous.
particularly the German bombers that were flying into Britain during the war, if they lost their navigation or they got lost anywhere on the navigation,
that's right, yeah.
they may have thought that they were coming over enemy territory. And this was just a way of stopping them dropping their payload over Ireland.
Fantastic. Absolutely brilliant. Now, the Coast Guard is loved by one and all, not just in Ireland, but in all countries that it protects. And the Irish Coast Guard is the subject of this particular story because there have been calls for an immediate rollout of training for Coast Guard members after the organisation banned the use of blue lights and sirens in vehicles while travelling to incidents.
I think this needs to be taken in the context of a report that was released recently after the untimely death of Adriana Lucas in County Clare a number of years ago off the coast of Kilkee. There was a major review done of all the Coast Guard activities and the way in which the training was applied. And I think maybe this is a health and safety fallout from that a little bit as well, knowing speculating on that. Really what they're saying is that in order to be able to blue light a vehicle, that you need to have done the advanced driving courses and that you need to be able to apply it in the most effective possible way, and that perhaps, and I'm again speculating, that many of the people that do blue light a vehicle like this and may not have that training done. Mm. What they're saying is that staff and volunteers were informed that while drivers are no longer permitted to use blue lights and sirens, the blues and twos, while driving on public roads, that they can use them when they're parked up. And I suppose that, again,
that
is
makes
just
sense, yeah.
An effort in safety as well.
A Russian man has been appointed as an Irish language officer in a Kerry Gaeltacht and will spearhead attempts to revive the Irish language there. That's a lovely story.
It actually sounds like the start of a Kerry joke, to be honest with you.
I'm not editing that out, no. That stays in.
But yeah, look, this is a great, and it did raise a few eyebrows, I think, when it appeared on the news wires over the week. Russian gentleman Viktor Baida, a native of Moscow, was appointed as the Irish language officer in Kerry, and he's fluent in Irish, having been teaching the language in a Moscow university for more than 10 years. He made the journey from Moscow to Kerry at the weekend, and he says he began learning the language while attending university, but that he was aware of its existence as a young teenager.
Lovely.
He says that along with taking a course while studying in Dublin, he also picked up a lot of Irish from listening to the language on TG Cahir and on Radio na Gaeltacht.
Yeah.
And I think it's just amazing. It is actually a serious point. We teach our children the Irish language from the age of 4 right the way through to Leaving Cert. And if you ask them 3 years after they've left school, could they put a sentence together? Many of them couldn't. And that's even after taking the Honours Irish course. Hmm. I wonder, are we teaching it correctly? If it were available maybe in a less strict, scholarly way, would people be more inclined to pick it up?
People have been afraid to voice their concerns and look at how we teach Irish in Ireland. And I think until such time as that's tackled, you're not going to see much improvement on it.
You're not. Just to balance that, Ger, the kids take up French, German, Spanish, in secondary school, and are often more fluent in it after 5 years than they would have been from taking it through all of the time.
Now, you and I grew up in Limerick City, and a part of the Limerick culture, the fabric of the community in Limerick City, is what we call the Solemn Novena. But the Galway Solemn Novena has kicked off, and more than 10,000 people are expected to attend this year's sessions.
Within Limerick, it happens in June, and it's a harbinger of the summer, I suppose. But it always happens at this time of the year in Galway. Now, I know that it's been run by the Redemptorist Fathers. It's in its 38th year in Galway. And they say this year's theme will reflect on the joy of love and family life. It's a 9-day novena, and it's taking place in the cathedral in Galway, and it runs until the 26th of February. It's a wonderful expression of people's faith in a time, I suppose, when that's waning.
All right. On post, the postal service in Ireland is to introduce zero-emission postal deliveries in Dublin city centre by the end of the year, and there are plans to extend that over the next wee while.
Well, when I saw this story coming up first, I thought there was a misprint in it, because I think it should say that it is to reintroduce zero-emission postal deliveries, because, of course, for many years they were done on a bicycle.
On a bicycle, he's right. Yes. Well, there would have been emissions there too. going up the hill.
No, just up the hill, yeah. But they are, yes. And I suppose this again links back into the whole global warming and the zero emissions. And the idea is it will extend the service to Cork, Galway, Limerick, Kilkenny and Waterford by the end of 2020. The company has placed an order for 200 electric vehicles that will operate on all deliveries between the Grand Canal and the Royal Canal in Dublin by the end of this year.
Now, somebody like myself that comes back and forth between Spain and Ireland quite a lot, looking at this story, interestingly enough, Ryanair has been fined €3 million by Italy's antitrust authority over its cabin baggage policy, which was introduced late last year. You can only bring a small little bag that you can put in under the seat in front of you. That's all you can do at the moment, unless you want to pay some fees. So an interesting story. I know Spain had been looking at that as well. I don't know where it is at the minute. So what do you reckon is going to happen with this?
I also would travel Ryanair quite a lot, and I do find that their constant changing of the baggage regulations is just very, very confusing. And you nearly take a deep breath every time you arrive at an airport in case at all you haven't got it right somewhere along the line. But the one thing I will say for Michael O'Leary and Ryanair, this could be contentious, is that he was the first man in the history of the world that was able to teach a woman how to pack a bag properly.
Oh God, I'm going to let that in as well, and I'm going to send it to your wife. Oh, yeah. That's your luck. We may as well cause some bit of trouble. What do you reckon? Anyway, I'll be interested to see if that's paid up, number one, and number two, if any other countries follow suit. Now, staying with things tourism and travel, the CEO of Tourism Ireland has said that he hopes that nearly 400 global icons will be lit up in green for St. Patrick's Day this year, following on from very successful campaigns in previous years.
I don't think Irish people fully understand or get how big the whole Patrick's Day effort around the world is. Few countries, if any, get the same level of exposure as Ireland do for their National Day. And I think Niall Gibbons, who is the CEO of Tourism Ireland, really put his finger on it here. They announced the global greening lineup for Patrick's Day in 2019. And just to put it into context, you know, global greening, which is, you know, where they put the green lights on things on Patrick's Day.
Yeah.
Victoria Falls, you know, Eden Project in Cornwall, we talk about Brexit, you know, the medieval city walls in New York, mm-hmm. And the cotton tree in Sierra Leone. And this is massive for Ireland. And I think maybe it shows how highly Ireland and Irish people are held around the world in people's eyes. It's nice to see it, and it's a wonderful way of promoting our country. I mean, one of these days we'll get a photograph from the International Space Station on Patrick's Day and the whole world will be just green. It'll be wonderful.
With envy. Right, I think it's time to call it a day. George?
I haven't got you into too much trouble this week, Ger, I hope.
You couldn't care less, but that's all right.
Have a great week.
As always, thank you for joining us, George. I look forward to chatting to you next week.
What did I have? Said the fine old woman. What did I have? This proud old woman did say. Say valley and sea, their wailing cries, they shook the very heavens. My foreign fields ran red with their blood, said she. Said the fine old woman, what have I now? This proud old woman did say, I have four green fields, one of them's in bondage. Strangers' hands who try to take it from me, but my sons have sons as brave as were their fathers. My fourth green field once again, said she.
There we go. That's a lovely version of that song. It comes from Tommy Makem. It's called Four Green Fields. That's a song that was requested. I was filling in for Giles Brown on last Friday between 4 and 6 here on Talk Radio Europe, and May gave me a call and she asked me to dedicate that to her husband, Pat. So I said, look, May, if I don't play it before 6 today, I would play it on Monday. So there it is for you. And thank you, May and Pat, for your regular listenership to not just Live on Air, but to Talk Radio Europe as well. Now, coming up just after the break, I will be talking to Pat Padre Adrian, who is the parish priest at St. Patrick's Church in Malaga. I'll be talking to him about the parish church because it's not our St. Patrick, but we'll find out a little bit more about that, but also about the St. Patrick's Day celebrations that he has planned. And I know that Patricia Traynor, whom I mentioned at the start of the programme, she was with me at the time and I know she has been involved, but I also know that our Spanish-Irish cultural consultant Jose Antonio Sierra has been working very closely with Padre Adrian, not just this year, but in previous years in bringing celebrations for St. Patrick's Day to Malaga. So there you go. It's a nice little club, isn't it? Absolutely. Find out more about that just after this quick break.
Live on Air, presented by Ger Sweeney in association with emeraldconnection.net. Live on Air, presented by Ger Sweeney in association with emeraldconnection.net.
There are St. Patrick's churches all over the world, and we Irish like to claim them. And there is a St. Patrick's or San Petrico church in Malaga that is not necessarily our St. Patrick's, but that doesn't mean that they don't celebrate St. Patrick's Day on the 17th of March. I went along and I spoke to the priest, Padre Adrian, Father Adrian, who has been in the parish for quite some time. And we got chatting very slowly because my Spanish is not good and his English is a little less good. So we got chatting about the parish and about San Patrico's church in Malaga and what they are going to be doing on St. Patrick's Day. So, Padre Adrian.
Thank you very much for your visit. My English is not good.
Tell me about the church, St. Patrick's Church in Malaga.
There is a big parish, but now he was diminished because of the extension of people, the new churches, but this is the main matrix church. Then our parish was founded by the Bishop Beato, the blessed Marcelo Spinola, at the end of the 19th century. But our St. Patrick's is another Patrick's. We celebrate two St. Patrick's, St. Patrick of Malaga and St. Patrick of Ireland. The new extension of Malaga in the century last, because there was the fabrics and in the industrial revolution, a lot of people from interior of the province came here for work, and the population was very big. The population very work, very strong, very humble. Also the feature, la pesca.
The fishing.
Yes, the fishing. The fishing, the fabric, and our parish was in several stages, several etapas. And then in the 20th century, suffered also the persecution religious as all Malaga. Then was renewed in the 1945, more or less. But here was a blessed bishop, Marcelo Spinola, and blessed Manuel González de García, and also the one of the priests who was after bishop of Malaga in the Granada, Don Emilio Benavent. And always our church was very live in the movement, Catholic movement. Also the college, the attention for the child, for the ouvrier, the father. St. Patrick of Malaga was in the second century, between second century and third century. He's assisted to the Elvira Council, a council, provincial council, anterior of Nicea. And then our bishop assisted afterwards, very famous in the Nicea and in the other, in the history of Spain. Our feast is in summer, 18th of August. First in the college began to celebrate St. Patrick of Ireland.
Father Adrian was just saying that the celebration of the St. Patrick from Malaga is on the 18th of August, but because the college next door is on holidays, they started to celebrate the Irish St. Patrick on the 17th of March. So what I wanted to find out was, what exactly do you do in the parish to celebrate the Irish St. Patrick on the 17th of March?
I invited the college to come here to celebrate with us in the church, because the communion between the college and the church is very strong. We celebrate also in attention to the Irish people, because this is a riches for the church, the communion from several countries, mainly because Ireland was a Christian country, very important in the church. Here in Malaga, there is, I think, numerous people of Ireland of all the culture, in relation with this Patrick. Gregorian sang the choral of Malacitan of Gregorian chant. Yes. And also the mass now, because each year we celebrate, this year we will celebrate in Sunday. The time is half past 12. Yes. We pray in Latin, in English and in Spanish. After the Mass, we have some refreshment. Perhaps in this year, in the quarter of the college.
Padre Adrián, muchas gracias. Thank you for talking to us today, and we wish you well on St. Patrick's Day.
thank you for you.
The voice that you also heard when I was talking to Father Adrian was the voice that you would have heard previously on the programme, and that is of Patricia Traynor from Belfast, who came along and introduced me to Father Adrian, as Jose Antonio Sierra had suggested I would do some time ago. But Patricia, just very quickly, St. Patrick's Day, 12:30 Mass here in San Patricios. Will you be here yourself?
Oh, of course, I would never miss it. It's a wonderful experience. They have a beautiful choir, Gregorian choir. Padre Adrian every year organizes the church to be decorated in green. People who come, ordinary parishioners, come with something green, green scarf or green hat, green whatever. And afterwards, are all made welcome for to have some tapas and some refreshments. And we thank him because it's a great thing for us to be able to celebrate St. Patrick's Day, even though we're here in Malaga.
Enjoy the day, and thank you for talking to us, and thank you for being our interpreter today as well, Patricia.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Now for something a little different, let's go and talk to Peter O'Dwyer, who is the senior business reporter with The Times Ireland. And Peter joins us on a weekly basis to tell us what's happening with Brexit. Peter, it's been a relatively busy week. Sorry, welcome to the programme, by the way.
Thanks.
I forget my manners sometimes, but when I get excited, but there you go. Peter, it has been a relatively busy week. Firstly, the back end of last week, the Irish government published its legislation in the event of a no-deal Brexit, and that basically outlined what was going to happen. Can you take us through that, please?
It was announced by Simon Coveney on Friday morning, and it was quite a bizarre scenario that was unfolding, really, where the Ring government buildings for a press conference with a what was described as a landmark piece of legislation that covers something like 15 different departments. There's 9 different ministers involved. You know, the whole of government basically having to scramble over the last 12 months to get this piece of legislation together. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, Simon Coveney was insisting that he hopes that it never sees the light of day, that it never has to be used, it never has to be passed through the Oireachtas and actually become law, which is obviously because this is in the event of a no deal. It sets out a range of different tweaks to current legislation to effectively maintain the status quo. It's trying to ameliorate as much of the damage as possible. There's a few small extra bits that are new in it, like Enterprise Ireland, the business supporting agency, would be given powers to lend directly to businesses, which they can't do at the moment. They can take a stake in the company or they can offer them grants, but they can't actually lend to them. Mm-hmm. So that's something that's aimed at trying to help businesses if we get to a no deal. There's also a VAT deferral scheme that's been drawn up as part of it, whereby companies maybe could have run into serious cash flow difficulties. If they were importing from the UK, they'd have to pay VAT upfront at the point of entry, but mm-hmm. this will give them another 6 months breathing space. So for the most part, it's simple stuff like continuing to allow buses to cross the border, our everyday sorts of stuff, continuing to work as it currently does. But there's a couple of little tweaks in it that are just aimed at trying to soften the blow for business as well.
But isn't it all fine and well we deciding that we're going to pass this legislation to allow things like buses pass over the border and stuff like that? But really, it will all depend on what the British want to happen or what can happen or what they're allowed to happen, because they have to have a say in that too, don't they?
The Prime Minister was asked about that to a degree on Friday in terms of what are the UK doing to mirror this sort of legislation. Yeah. And in some areas, it seems like they are. And in some areas, in fact, it has already been agreed. So something like pensions, Irish citizens living in the UK and UK citizens living over here.
Right.
A deal has been done to make sure that they can continue to access their pensions and different social welfare payments. So in some areas, the civil servants on both sides of the water have already done enough work to ensure that that continues. Okay. In some areas, it seems like the UK are mirroring what is being done here. And then in some areas, presumably it isn't quite there yet, but you would imagine that it is coming, even if it isn't done on the UK side yet.
This is costing us a fortune. Are we getting some few bob from EU for this? Are we getting a grant, in other words?
Yeah, well, we saw last week as well, on Friday morning, there was two. So as the Irish government were kind of shifting the gear to put the no-deal plans that they had on the shelf into action, so too was the EU. We saw that Carberry, which is an agri-food company based down in West Cork, had EU state aid approval granted to them on Friday morning as well. So that was something, that was a first. And it's basically they're going to get funding to try and diversify away from their main business, because that's going to be hit so much by Brexit. And also we saw that state aid rules generally were going to be tweaked a bit so that all member states could give more support without the backing of the EU Commission. It basically, they're giving national governments a little more leeway to help out businesses without falling foul of these rules that Brussels have set.
Now, yet another vote has been postponed by Theresa May in her hopes to get a little bit extra from Europe. What has our Taoiseach Leo Varadkar had to say about that?
This was done on the fringes of a summit that was being held in Egypt. And quickly, Leo Varadkar responded to it. He said that she can delay it all she wants, but that the Irish position isn't going to change. He said Ireland and the EU aren't playing chicken, they're not playing poker, and no matter how long that vote is delayed, Ireland's position and the EU's position specifically on the backstop won't be changing. He said again that they were happy to discuss any sort of assurances that the House of Commons might need to give it greater confidence in passing the withdrawal agreement and greater confidence in the fact that the backstop would only be temporary if it is ever used and they never want to use it. All the stuff that we've heard before. Mm-hmm. But he's essentially saying if this is a delaying tactic or if it's designed to put more pressure on Ireland or the EU, that it's not going to be particularly successful.
All right. And speaking of things that are being delayed or could be delayed, there's speculation that Brexit itself could be delayed until 2021.
On Saturday, we were reporting in the Times that, as far as we understood, that it was likely that Brexit essentially would be delayed, that Article 50 would be extended if Theresa May went to Europe and asked for it, that she'd be given it. In The Guardian then this morning, we saw that, but with a little more detail, whereby they're suggesting that EU officials are anxious not to get into short extensions to Brexit or to Article 50, so that if Theresa May looks for an extension to avoid a no deal at the end of next month, rather than just kicking it down the road until the summer or even 6 months' time, they're suggesting that Brexit will be delayed until 2021, that this will have to be put out by quite a long space of time to try and find a solution to the backstop specifically. So whether that would be palatable to enough people in the House of Commons remains to be seen. Probably a lot of people wouldn't like it. A lot of the Brexiteers wouldn't like that idea. But you can certainly see the logic from Brussels' point of view that if you were just going to push it from March until June or July, you can easily see how you get into the same situation pretty quickly again. So it makes a certain amount of sense.
It looks like you and I will be spending a little bit of time together. Isn't that nice?
Yeah, we could be at this for a couple of years yet, I think.
We could both be retired and it could still be going on, but there you go. Anyway, Peter, as always, plenty of food for thought in there. Thank you for joining us this evening, and we look forward to chatting to you again next week on the programme.
Great, thanks, sir.
That is Peter O'Dwyer, who is the Senior Business Reporter with The Times Ireland.
Live on Air, presented by Ger Sweeney in association with emeraldconnection.net. Live on Air, presented by Ger Sweeney in association with emeraldconnection.net.
Now, if you happen to be in Torremolinos on Thursday, which is the 28th of February, hard to believe it's the end of the month already, there is a lovely event happening called Dia de Andalucía. And joining me on the phone right now is the Culture, Eventos and Foreign Residents Councillor at Torremolinos. That's Aida Blanes Arias. Very nice to talk to you, Aida.
Hi, thank you very much.
Good. Are you excited about the Dia de Andalucía?
Yes, we celebrate on Thursday, 28th of February, our Dia de Andalucía. It's a day for our people here in our region. And we are going to have a lot of events that start this day, but they last until Sunday. So We have all the weekend to enjoy these events, especially a product market from products from Andalusia, everything handmade and made here in our region.
Right.
So I think that's a lot of things to do in 4 days, and I hope that you enjoy it.
And tell me, what time does it start on Thursday and what time does it start each day?
Well, on Thursday, we are going to start at 12 in Andalucía Square.
Mm-hmm.
We have all the institutional events, everything with the flag and the hymn and all the events, more protocolary events, I think. I don't know if you say it.
That's okay.
Like this.
Yeah, we understand.
Okay. But also we have music, we have performance and painting for children. We have a lot of things to do around our flag, our Andalusian flag, and our hymn that we have also.
Okay.
And then the products of Andalusia Market that we are going to have in Palma de Mallorca Square.
right.
the new one, so we can enjoy the new square also with a lot of activities. We are going to have music, dance, and also, as I said, the market.
Now, Thursday and Friday are traditional working days, so will there be as much activity on those days as there will be during the weekend?
Well, Thursday here is not a working day.
Oh.
No, not in Andalusia. In Andalusia, we don't work on the 28th. It's our day, so it's for holidays. And also for children all the week, because all the children don't go to school on the next week.
So it's a four-day event. And will there be people traveling to Torremolinos from all over the region?
Yes, people come here because we do a lot of things, and there is the carnival right now. So there's a lot of things happening in Andalusia in these days. And I think that it's a good moment to travel. Good. Also, we have a really good weather, and we have sun and the beach, and everything starts right now. It's like when February ends, our summer starts. Something like this.
Okay. I also know that you're planning a weekend of celebration, the Saturday and the Sunday, for St. Patrick's Day. So does that mean that people in Torremolinos love parties and celebrations?
People love parties here in Spain, and especially in Torremolinos. We love to do things in the streets for everyone to enjoy. And we are going to have in Nogalera Square our St. Patrick's Day all the weekend.
Yes.
We have been doing this for a few years, and I think that people love parties, but people also love to know the cultures that live here in Torremolinos. We have a 25% of foreigner people living here,
right.
Foreigner residents. That is the area that I also work in. And we enjoy by celebrating also your days, your special days.
That's
for
it.
Every different country that lives here in Torremolinos. And we have another appointment, that is the Residence Day, also a weekend. It started like a day, but now it's a weekend.
Mm-hmm.
In April, we celebrate with all the countries that live here and have business or have associations, anything that they want to have a stand. And they show us their gastronomy, their culture, their popular dancing, their music, everything.
Well, I will be in the square definitely from Thursday onwards just to see what's happening. And I'll make it to the Foreign Residence Day in April as well, and St. Patrick's Day. So we look forward to celebrating and maybe having an old dance with you as well. How's that?
Yes, of course. You have to look for me because I will be happy to celebrate with you also these
Excellent.
Days.
All right. That is Aida Blenes-Arias, and she is the Culture Eventos and Foreign Residence Counselor with Torremolinos. Aida, thank you very much for talking to us today.
Thank you very much for asking.
There we go. That's Rory Gallagher, a man whose birthday we mark this week. He was born on the 1st of March, and that is on Friday. That's a song that's called Bad Penny. A man that was taken from us way too young and way too early. Alrighty, that's my lot for today. Look after yourselves in the next week, please. If you fancy it, I will be on doing a completely different programme on Friday afternoon between 4 and 6 here on Talk Radio Europe. That's filling in for Giles Brown on GB, not GQ. If you can't make that, have a good week. Join me, please, if you can, on Monday between 6 and 7 next for Live on Era. And we're getting very close to St. Patrick's Day. We'll be probably featuring a little bit about that. Patricia Traynor will be joining us for the first time as a regular correspondent on the programme, and there'll be the usual bits and pieces as well. As always, can I say thank you very much to our Spanish-Irish cultural correspondent and consultant, that is Jose Antonio Sierra. So thank you for your company today. Look forward to it again very soon. From me, Ger Sweeney. Until then, bye-bye now.
Ger Sweeney presents Live on Era in association with emeraldconnection.net.
You've been listening to a TRE production. If you've enjoyed this programme, there'll be another episode waiting for you next week, right here on this platform, where you can also access our extensive back catalogue of shows and interviews. For more information on our live programming, social media channels and apps, and how to contact Talk Radio Europe, please visit tre.radio.